Welcome to the Earth Body Mind Spirit Podcast, where we imagine the future of human civilization as one that thrives with nature, and where you as an individual thrive as well. We'll give you the tools and the tips and the information to make that world a reality. I'm your host, Mike Stokes. So if you're anything like me and you really want to buy the right product that doesn't contribute to deforestation or to the destruction of species populations in the ocean, it's confusing, and there's so much information out there, so much contradictory information out there, and so much greenwashing. So I've been on this personal mission to try to figure out how do you do that, and how do you do it in the best way. So today's interview is along a series of interviews that I'm doing on that topic, is with UEBT, which is not well known in the United States because they operate more on the ground around the world, helping solve those ecological complex problems that are happening when you're trying to harvest in wild places. So if you're concerned about certifications and sort of, you know, how do you weave through all the information that you get after, you know, this hour-long interview, you'll know kind of like I learned so much about what exactly is third-party certification. Do certifications really matter? Where do they matter? Where do they don't matter? What certifications should we be focusing on? This one's more specifically about UEBT, but it does give you a broader context of all the certifications that are out there and how they work and how they don't work. So without further ado, my interview with Laura Koritsky, the communications director from UEBT, the Union for Ethical Biotrade. So Laura, thank you for coming on the show today. Otherwise, people just don't know who, you know, these people doing this amazing work are. So why don't you tell me just like on the real top level view, who is UEBT and what are they trying to do, and how, like drilling it down for us as consumers and people who want to use these products that are sourced properly from wild places, you know, what does it do and how does it work and how can we trust it?
Great. Well, yeah. So we're a nonprofit. We've been around since 2007. And our work is really focused on the botanical ingredients that go into products like beauty products, food, cosmetics, beverages, herbs and spices, herbal teas. So these are the plant and sometimes other ingredients like beeswax, or it can be non-plant. But these are the ingredients that you often see that are quite specialty ingredients in things. So we're not talking about the big crops that are traded in bigger volumes, like the bananas and the coffee beans and the cocoa. We're actually talking about like thousands of special natural ingredients like lavender, aloe vera, macadamia nuts, and these that are used in all these more specialized products. So you see them a lot in the beauty sector, you know, so we're talking about like the wax, the natural waxes and butters and seeds and flowers and fruits and roots and stems. Those are the things. But then you also see them when I say food and beverage, it's like functional food, functional beverage, like the energy drinks, the herbal teas, the fruit infusions. So it's this kind of thing. A lot of things also in the natural pharmaceutical sector, so the health and wellness sector. And then what we do is we work with the companies that are sourcing these for the products. And we work generally on the ground to help ensure that the way they're picked, because some of them are like collected or picked from the wild, like people will go into forests where they're just growing spontaneously and they'll pick them from there and it gives them an income. And then some of them are farmed, you know, cultivated. And so we will make sure that they're being farmed or collected in ways that are respectful of the environment, but also respectful of the people. So the farmers, the workers, the pickers, that they're, you know, decent conditions, decent wages, things like that. So we work on that with companies and we work with local companies. So like you were mentioning, you had interviewed, I think, one of our members, ForestWise, which is a local company in Borneo in Indonesia. But we also work with big brands, so we work with, you know, beauty brands and food brands and things like that, but all of it is looking at these kinds of ingredients.
So I guess I'm just trying to think of, like, as a consumer, so obviously UABT, the Union for Ethical Biotrade, is not well known in the United States, at least. I don't know about the rest of the world. And the little logo, I can't really pull it up. It's, you know, it's got the little, the lion on it. And and I, you know, I've been in this for a long time and I'm like, oh, that looks interesting. What's that about? You know, and I'm personally of the opinion that we need to, so when I was talking to Dirk, we talked about this idea of a canopy economy and having incentivizing the local people to preserve the wild space rather than to cut it down, burn it, put in a, you know, even I heard it said once in a documentary that I was watching that the quickest and easiest way to create an organic coffee farm is to go in, burn the forest down, plan a plantation and then go get your organic certification. So clearly something's wrong with, you know, consumers are saying like, okay, all I got to do is buy organic coffee. Now I know you're not dealing with the coffee brands per se, but things like what you're doing with the peripheral products and what, you know, the Smithsonian's trying to do with their bird friendly certification and then the other rainforest certifications. I guess if you could just tell us like what, how do we know, what do you check? Like, you know, how do we know that a UABT source is preserving an ecosystem and not just somebody coming in and chopping it down and then planting a monoculture and then call and then going and getting all the certifications that they can?
Yeah, no, those are really interesting points. So, yeah, you're referring to certification, which is where we see labels on products, right? Like a little eco label. And you mentioned some of them there. And I think in the US, the most widely known is organic certification. And I think for us, you know, and this goes to your point of we're not well known, is we do certification, and that's why you're referencing a little label of ours with a lion. It's got like little hands and their leaves, and yeah, and we can find it and edit it in and show it. But we do that because we do think it can be a useful tool, but it is just one tool, and it has its limitations. And I think one of the reasons that we aren't as well known perhaps is because we actually don't, most of what we do is not that kind of certification where you go in and they have to meet a standard and you go every year and it's kind of like this pass fail kind of dynamic, which is important in some markets where you really have this need to have that consumer-facing label that assures people of something. But in our world, which are these ingredients in beauty products, functional food, herbal tea, you can imagine these are products that it's not like a banana or even like a bag of coffee. These are products that have hundreds of different ingredients in the product. There's all this mixing, right? And so the model, the traditional certification model gets very difficult with these products that mix a lot of things. So so what we do is we are like those ones you mentioned. We do have a standard and we do go out in the field and we look at the practices. But most of what we do is not at that level of like, okay, you meet all of this and then you get a label. We do have that, but it's for some very specific companies that really feel they want to do that. And it's often certain brands and for certain, and it might be a brand that feels that's really important for them. But
Weleda?
Mostly, Yes, Weleda is
Yep.
one. Yeah,
Yep.
sure. And I think you've probably seen the label on some Weleda products in the US. So that might be where we're seen. But we're working with lots of other companies where for them, it's a little bit more focus on gradual improvement, learning. And I know that's not very exciting because a consumer can't see that. But for us, we really like it because we think it drives a lot of impact. It's a little bit less focused on reaching a really high bar. So it allows sort of companies where there are a lot of challenges, and we do see a lot of challenges in these botanicals.
Yeah.
You
Can I add
mentioned, oh, yeah,
just how, yeah,
please,
I just wanted to add
please.
how I think you're right on. I really appreciate that. And it, you know, like I said, I've been in this for, you know, 30 years, and I've only recently come to appreciate the importance of the nuances of the certifications. You know, I recently went to an event. I don't know if you remember Julia Butterfly Hill. She's lived up in a redwood tree
Oh
and
yeah,
saved
of course.
the redwood tree. So she
Yeah,
was at
in
a local event
California.
here, and I spoke with her, and I was asking her about FSC certification because I did another
Yeah.
interview with the forest policy director of Mendocino Redwood Company, which is a local product.
I have observed an FSC audit at Mendocino Redwood
Oh,
Company, so
really?
I know exactly
That's
where
great.
you're talking about.
Well, you know,
I know them well. Yeah.
Anyway, so I interviewed John Anderson. We had a long, great interview. But Julia, so when I interviewed Julia, she had a very different take on it. Obviously,
Yeah,
she's much
sure.
more committed to like that, you know, the nature itself as opposed to the integration. Or I don't know. I didn't speak with her long enough to get her whole nuanced view. But the one point that she brought up was that the problem with FSC is that it doesn't tier. It doesn't allow for a growth process. It is a pass fail. And so it kind of like levels out, you know? And I thought that was really interesting. And it kind of made me, because I used to just look at the FSC and be like, okay, whew, I'm okay. And then, you know, well, maybe I'll get an FSC person on later to talk more about the international challenges and the bulk mixed paper things, because I know that's an issue. But the point is, I just wanted to underline that. And maybe you could have advice for someone on the consumer end, how we can, because here's the challenge. It's complicated. We need it to be
Absolutely.
simplified, and I don't know that there's an easy way to simplify it. So anything that can help us simplify it while still honoring the complexity of it is kind of what we need. So.
Yeah, no, I hear you. And I think, people understand labels and green checks and good and bad and those kind of binaries. And I wish I could say, oh, that's the tool that works all the time, everywhere. And I'm not saying it's not a powerful tool. And I do think, and I used to work for Rainforest Alliance for 11 years. So I've been in sustainability for almost 25 years now. And almost all of my work has been focused on the world of standards and certifications. So I deeply understand it. As I've been on FSC audits. It is complicated. And that pass-fail model, I think when it started many years ago, we thought like that's gonna solve it,
Yeah,
Everybody's gonna
that's
reach this
what I
and
thought.
then everything will be labeled and
Yeah.
it will just know. That being said, you want simple for consumers. I'm a consumer too. I do think that in many of these sectors where you have a choice between what we would call the conventional
Yeah.
and the one that has some kind of sustainability
Yeah.
credential or
Yeah.
label, I
Yeah.
think, and we are talking about some challenging commodities, so the wood, the palm oil, the coffee, the black tea, large scale commodities. And where there are some credible, and I do think they are credible and they're working hard and there are a lot of complexities and nuances and it's not perfect. I do think for the consumer, the ones with the credible labels are probably better choices than the non-credible the conventional.
And would you be willing to identify the ones that you think are more credible than others?
Sure. So one of the things that many consumers don't know about this world is we actually have an umbrella group that sets good practices for us.
Okay.
And it's not a well-known group. It's not really a group that also is really focused on consumers, but it's called ISEAL, ISEAL.org. It's basically our umbrella group, if you think of like, it's like our association, and they set these codes for how we can do what we do credibly. And my organization that we're talking about today, Union for Ethical Biotrade, UEBT, is a member of ISEAL, as is Forest Stewardship Council, FSC, who you just mentioned, Marine Stewardship Council, Aquaculture Stewardship Council, the Round Table on Sustainable Palm Oil, Rainforest Alliance, Fair Trade, and there are more. And what we all have in common, we all work on different issues.
Is Smithsonian bird?
On botanicals, FSC works on timber, but we follow a set of practices for how we set our standards, how we monitor our impacts, and how we actually do the work on the ground in the field to check things. And that's what we have in common, and we follow ISEAL codes. And
do you
there
know
are,
Smithsonian is a member?
Oh, Smithsonian Bird Friendly. I don't know, but there are groups that are, I just want to make clear, there are groups that aren't members that are still quite interesting. And I haven't looked at them in a long time. You know, one of the things that people often don't understand is they try to pit us against each other, right? Like, is Bird Friendly better than Rainforest Alliance, better than Fair Trade? And I'll tell you, as a consumer, if I was looking at bags of coffees, I would just be happy to get, I'm happy with any of them, because what I know is, because I have worked in this world, is they're all trying to make sustainability impacts in some way.
Right.
And they just, many of them will tackle different places or different issues. So, Bird Friendly, they're really trying to get at the issues that I think you were mentioning, like forest cover, wildlife, protection of habitat. And they just like many of us in our own workplaces, they like to focus on that. It helps them focus. And then there are others like Rainforest Alliance that choose to what we call look at a more holistic set of issues, where they'll look at many, many issues. And that might be important in certain places or certain markets. You know, there are places, here, let me give you an example. There are lots of different production systems out there. I hope that's not sounding too technical, but if you think about farming, right, on anything, you can have big, sort of plantations, and you want, and then you might have a small farm that's doing some really interesting work, and there's forest cover, and it's small scale, and there's local communities involved, and there's just a lot of good sort of environmental and social practices already in place. What we don't want is that, we don't address that there are things that can be improved in all of those models, right? So some nonprofits working on in this will choose to try to work with the big, large scale issues as well. They'll try to work with the industrial mines or the large scale industrial forests or the large scale banana plantations. And then there's organizations, and what they're trying to do is they're still trying to move the needle. Right? They're still trying to create positive impact. As a consumer, we might say, well, we just want the perfect little wonderful farm over here. That's the reality is you have this mass spectrum. And so organizations will often focus on different issues and also different types of operations, or they try to do it all and they have this kind of continuous improvement approach where you know, you see things like that. We're kind of in that holistic category. So we work with some very, you know, wonderful, beautiful, you would see beautiful practices, interesting projects going on in parts of the world where in general, the farming or the collection practices are very, very good. But we also like to work in the very difficult. There's a lot of challenges, a lot of agrochemical use. Yep. Pickers and farmers not getting a fair price or not getting the equivalent of minimum wages. And we're there too, but without labeling. So, you know, we're not getting into the labeling, but we're on the ground. Yeah. We're trying to get things to move a little bit. Yeah. We're trying to reduce harm. We're trying to get it, we're trying to move things a little bit. But because of that, we're not at a place where we feel comfortable or even the companies feel comfortable putting a label on it yet and saying this is ethical or responsible. We do have that in some programs, but we're kind of working in a lot of different ways.
Well, that's great. It's awesome to hear that so again, the interface between the consumer and you guys is most likely going to be a label that they sort of notice somewhere on maybe a Weleda product or just on some other thing. So is there, are there any other, let's just stick with the US market. Are there any other products that you know that the label is on?
So our label, so one of the things is we do have members and we're working with about 200 different companies now. Not all of them will be choosing to use the label. And in fact, we don't even promote it that much because it's more interesting to us to get them working and improving. But I would say consumers could go to our website, which is uebt.org. And there's a consumer facing area, which if you put in uebt.org/hello, that's our consumer facing site. That's, you can see the brands, and for consumers, I think you want to see the brands that are working with us, because that then you'll recognize.
I'm in there right now.
Are you there?
Yeah,
okay, great. So you can
there's
see
some brands. Yeah, Christian and Dior, Weleda, Melvita. I like what you're saying, because you know, just like most consumers, I'm focused on the little label. I'm going, I gotta buy something, I'm like, is there anything on there? But the other thing is, I'm more and more, I'm of the opinion that the body shop, there's that too, I'm of the opinion that I just want to find a company. You know what I mean? Like, I know that anything I buy from Patagonia is gonna be in line with my values. Like, I just know it. They're just, that's who they are. That's what they do. Yeah. And so now I'm just trying. So for example, the body shop. Yeah. I'm pretty sure that, you know, the more I learn about the body shop, the more I know that they're going to be doing things that are aligned with my values.
No, absolutely. That's exactly right. You know, I mean, you're taking the words right out of my mouth. I think some of it now is about brands as opposed to labels. Not, again, if you see the labels, you know, that's great. And especially the credible ones. And one of the ways you can know they're credible, you can look at ISIL, but you can also just look at how much information is there. Yeah. You know, is it clear? Is there a place? Is there something to show you there's more information? Yeah. Does it seem like there's an independent organization behind it? I think we've all seen labels where, like, they're kind of look like you can't figure them out.
Total greenwashing.
They look like they're kind of created.
Yeah, you can tell there's nothing behind it.
But I also think, like, now it is also about companies. And I do think you mentioned Patagonia. I think it's a great example of, you're not going to see independent labels on Patagonia products because they've just chosen, and I think that's their prerogative. They actually work with many, many nonprofits and independent organizations on all sorts of the raw materials that go into those clothing. They work with a responsible wool standard. They work with the palm oil people that I mentioned, because palm oil is often used as a coating on clothing, which I had no idea about. But you're not going to see the label because they just choose not to. They really just choose to make it clear it's Patagonia. And then if you go to the website, they talk about all of this. And I think it doesn't make it easy. I know I'm basically saying get to know the companies. But I think one of the things I could say is, you know, just helping to make yourself aware of some of the bigger issues. And then indeed, it is about looking at what brands are doing and what companies are doing. And I think, like for us, because we have brands that become members and that gets them working with us on these things I was telling you about, that's one way. You know, are they working with credible nonprofits? Are they engaging in responsible sourcing and they talk about it in a credible way? So those are some of the things, you know, you can learn about. And then, you know, you can maybe follow those companies that are of interest. I mean, especially if there's specific products you really, really love, I would say get to know the company behind those products. What are they doing? Learn about them, you know?
Can you talk about, I don't know, can you talk about specific companies or specific, you know, like examples of a product that kind of brings it more down to home? So, you know, the most probably something that would be most widely recognized, like a food ingredient or something, you know, can you talk, give us an example of what UEBT would do?
So I'm gonna give you an example of a rather challenging sector, I guess. So, because why not? Let's talk about the challenges. I mentioned to you that we like to work where we can make improvements. And one of the things we do is we work with companies on the ground in a collective way, right? So we try to, if there's a specific area where a lot of work needs to be done, then we'll get companies kind of focusing together and helping with that. So one of the ingredients a lot of people don't know about, but it's in a lot of materials, is carnauba wax. It's a natural wax. It comes from a palm tree in Brazil. It's really only grown in northeastern Brazil. It grows in the wild and it's collected and it becomes, it's kind of a small fruit and people go and they collect it and then it turns into a natural wax that's very glossy and very, it's got these very wonderful properties. And
it's give me an example, what products is it used in?
So it's used in cosmetics, it's used in food, predominantly candies, it's used a lot as a coating. It's used also in these bigger industries, like as auto polish and car wax. So that's probably not something a lot of consumers are thinking about.
This brings up a great point.
Go ahead.
No, I just we're having a little bit of internet connectivity issue. I just want to underline, you know, so for those of us that care about reinventing society in a way that's in harmony with nature, it's gonna come down to us all being aware that we have to think about car wax. You know, it's everywhere. We don't get to just like, oh, I'm just gonna focus on the stuff I put on my skin. No, it's everything that we do has to be reinvented in this new way that in which we live in as if we are one with nature, because we are one with nature. And the more, you know, one of my favorite people is Joseph Campbell. And he says, you know, when we destroy nature, we destroy our own being. And so it's more of a, you know, you brought up when we were off camera, this idea of ontological, which is our whole sense of being. It's who we are. And so we have to come to see ourselves as part of this collective of nature. You know, we're still individuals and we need what we need as a person, but we have to honor all of the things that bring us life, our own life.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think I was mentioning to you, Mike, that there are these global meetings that happen every 2 years that are called the COPs, and maybe you read about them in the news and they'll say, oh, you know, at the climate conference of the parties, these are these big UN-led meetings where all the governments of the world come together and they talk about these issues. And there's one coming up later this year on biodiversity. It's called COP16, and there will be, 200 governments there. And what's really incredible, I just learned yesterday, is that one of the themes they're going to be focusing on, or the main theme, is peace with nature. But then there are these sub-themes, and one of them is this issue, and again, they use this word ontological, of how we need to fix the idea, and this is a multi-government meeting, but it's this idea that we need to fix this binary idea of us versus them, or nature as the object for us, and we're like on the other side, or you could say slave and master, these kinds of dynamics, because otherwise we're not going to fix things. Yeah. And just quickly going back to Carnauba, and you mentioned the auto wax, I think it can be overwhelming for a consumer, even though it is correct, it's everywhere, it's everything. And especially when you're talking about nature in products, natural ingredients, like a natural wax is inside of auto polish. But one of the things we do see is that it's often, and this is linked to consumers, it's often the industry sectors that are tied to consumers' demands for sustainability that will move faster towards sustainability. So we work in cosmetics and food, and what we're seeing in Carnauba wax, which I mentioned, it's a fruit, it's grown in Brazil. There are challenges around invasive species. There's some challenges around working conditions. So we've got a bunch of companies working together, and it includes brands, and it includes the people in the middle of the supply chain that distribute the wax and buy it from Brazil. It also includes local companies in Brazil, but they're all trying to work on these challenges to make the Carnauba more responsible. But what we're seeing is it's the beauty companies and it's the candy companies that are leading the way. And you're going to see this more than you're going to see it in like the part of the sector that uses it for industrial construction. That's because consumers don't, I mean, I'm not, maybe there are consumers that are really looking at their car wax.
Not too many.
But it is that, but that shows the decisive, powerful role of consumers.
Yeah.
Because consumers care about what they put in their body, what they put on their body, what they wear, those kinds of things. And that's where the companies, the brands, are going to move more quickly. Because, and I'm not saying it's just because they're only like blown around by consumers' demands, but they are very interested in ensuring that consumers, are being satisfied. They're trying to meet their expectations.
Yeah,
so in Carnauba, we have this group, and it's the candy people. It's, you can go on our website and type in Carnauba, and you're going to see some of those same brands. It's many of our members, but we also see Mars Wrigley there, which they make Skittles, I think, and Haribo, which are the German makers of gummy bears. They're in that group, and then a number of the beauty brands.
Can you speak to how the Carnauba is grown? Like, is it a canopy product? Is it a plantation product? Is it a hybrid? What are the, because let me sort of underline this question with the thing that really is, I think, important, that I don't think it's enough airtime. And that is that we need to try to set up systems that incentivize, the wild places to be cared for. So that's why I love what ForestWise is doing, is because they're creating this harvest, this canopy harvest system that incentivizes the local people not to sell their land to a palm oil plantation, but to preserve it and enhance it and then harvest all of the 6, 7, 8, 10 products that are already coming out of it in a sustainable way. So can you give us what are the issues around the Carnauba? Is it different?
Yeah, no. So this is exactly right at the heart of our mission. So it is an ingredient that is grown in a high biodiversity landscape. So This area of the world, this northeastern part of Brazil, it's actually called the Caatinga biome. It's a semi-arid bioregion. I'm sorry, I'm getting a little technical now, but
No,
it's an
that's fine.
important ecosystem. It's an important ecosystem. And ca the Carnauba tree is a really important species. It's important. And a lot of these plant species have these incredible cultural and traditional uses and knowledge. So the
So they're
Carnauba
not
tree is like,
plantations.
they're not. No, they're
Good.
actually,
Good.
these are forests, and it is, I believe it's wild collected. I'm just going to make sure I'm not saying that incorrectly, but it's not cultivated. It is wild. These are wild forests. They are not, protected areas, so they are, the forests are owned, and they are, I guess you would call them productive forests, but these are not farms. They're not growing this in a farm. It is a forest, and people go in there, and they collect this fruit, which has a lot of traditional uses, and it's really an important product, not only because it's important in those sectors I mentioned because of its unique properties, but for us, it's incredibly important because it's a high biodiversity place in the world. And so this is exactly what you're saying. If we can make sure that it's harvested sustainably, with respect for the environment, with respect for those people that go in and collect it, that they're paid fairly, that the conditions are safe. This is a semi-arid area, so we have to make sure that they have enough water and protective equipment. It's hot, it's dry there. And that they're taking care of the surrounding forest, not over harvesting, taking too much from the forest. So these are the kinds of things, and you're right, by ensuring that these things are in place and ensuring that the market is still there for Carnauba, responsible Carnauba, then you have this incentive to keep the forest standing, right? Instead of the forest being worth more being cleared and turned into something else. And so a lot of the work we do, and you mentioned our member ForestWise, is focused on these ingredients where they are ingredients that grow in some of the most biodiverse places. And it's better to be engaged and to have them being used by the beauty sector or the food sector because it is a way to give that ingredient in that biodiverse place, it becomes an income option for people. And if the income option is there, then they keep growing it. Another example that many people have probably heard of is Brazil nuts,
I
which
was
is
just
a
gonna
nut
bring
grown in the Amazon in Brazil, but also in Peru and I think in Bolivia. And this is also harvested or collected from the wild. And also used in cosmetics, but also in food. We see it in just raw as nuts. And it's incredibly important. And it's also, there's a lot of communities that rely on this for their livelihoods, for income during the harvest season. And so to keep that there, it actually helps to keep the forest intact.
That's great. So in the Carnauba, I guess maybe that'll be for another day. I guess the anyone who's listening can look it up. I found your Carnauba page on your website.
Oh, you did. Yeah.
Yes. It's interesting. I mean, it would take too long to kind of go through all this stuff, but
No, I mean that could be, a whole other thing. I mean, we work with like 200 different types of ingredients in 70 countries. So that was just an example of one where
challenging one.
it's not really focused on certification and labeling. It's really focused on it as a sector, and we're trying to bring companies together locally and internationally and try to kind of promote better practices,
Right.
products on the ground, things like that.
And so I guess the thing that just keeps coming up in my mind is how am I going to help the people who are listening and watching to this make better choices?
Yeah. And,
one is, I guess, just to be aware of the work that you're doing and how you are trying to promote this, these economies and just staying engaged in the community. But then again, I'm still, when I go to the store, I still got to purchase the product. And I got to know. Obviously, we've talked about Patagonia and the body shop. And, and I would just add from the Brazil nut example that you brought up, it's my understanding that the Brazil tree is wild pollinated by a local fly, which needs an intact biodiverse system in order to survive. So you can't actually create a Brazil nut plantation. You have to do it wild harvested, and that it has over the years become a collective. I don't know if you guys were involved with this, but the indigenous peoples are harvesting them. They get a moderately fair wage, better than they used to. And then they have cooperatives. So for example, I know, given my research that I've done, I haven't done a Brazil nut episode yet, but I know that almost every time I buy a Brazil nut, I am promoting this wild, sustainable wild harvesting, incentivizing people to keep the forest intact. So I guess that's kind of what I keep coming back to is how do we help people make better choices so that they know when they go to the store, they're doing the best they can to incentivize the locals to keep the forest intact. I know it's probably not an easy answer, but maybe you could give us your best shot.
well, I like I said, I do think there's a really powerful role for labels in some products, and we've mentioned some of them here. So I do want to encourage people, don't turn away from labels if they're interesting to you, and if you see them, look at them, look at the information on them, and where labels are available and that they have some credibility, and I think we know what many of them are, I do feel you can trust in those, and that they're working seriously. They're not perfect, but they're working very seriously.
Well, you brought up trust. You brought up trust. So we got to address trust because, there's so little trust, especially in the United States today. Like if you mention the word government, trust goes down, 50% practically. And then the same thing that I'm noticing, I live in a pretty progressive, it's a mixed, but there's a lot of progressives in my community. And then there's a lot of conservatives in my community. But I'm noticing just the people don't trust large organizations anymore or less and less, it seems. And then the minute you bring up international or the United Nations or some larger entity, trust factors start dropping again. So I know this is a topic for, probably 20 episodes with 20 different people, but maybe we could start that conversation today. Like why should people trust you, and why should people trust these other entities, and what are the inherent, because for me, it all comes down to incentives, right? Everyone has an incentive to do a particular one thing or another. And so how do we know that the incentives are true? What are the checks and balances that hold people's greed in check and need for power or biases or these kind of elements? Again, I know it's a huge question, but let's just at least take a stab at it so we can start the conversation.
Well, maybe to your first point about, all these things, international and big, and how do we trust? It can just be overwhelming. So I also think it's important to say to people who are just trying to put food on the table and just trying to, but they want to be good and they don't want to buy things that have created harm. It's okay, I think, to just focus on what you can know and can trust, and to release yourself from feeling that you have to be perfect in everything. And if that means that you prefer to buy local, that has its own importance, right? There are sustainability elements to things being transported internationally, right? And things like that. So there, it might be that you say, you know, for me, it's about going to the farmer's market and buying from the people I know, or buying something in bulk that I know was actually produced here in Sonoma County or whatever, or you know, or it's less packaging because I'm worried about pulp and paper and timber. It's okay to focus on issues or to just say, you know, there's certain international things I know I can't get locally, like bananas, like coffee, like, and so there I'm going to look for that label. But to your point of how do you trust and all of this polarization, I would say there's some things at a high level that I think can be trusted more. And one of those is, I think, in general, if you see that there's a level of independence between the people making the money and the people, you know, doing the checks. So it's just some general things. And this goes back to when I was talking about we have this umbrella group that sets certain practices for us. We need to be impartial. And so what that means is when you're looking at labels, it's a good idea if the label is a different entity than the actual company with the label, if you know what I mean.
For
It's
sure.
good if it's a label from somebody over here, as opposed to like my brand is Lara Cosmetics and I created my own label that says
So
green.
third
So
party,
impartiality and
basically third
independence
party.
is. Third party is a very specific technical term, and yes, so what when we say third party, it means that it's fully independent, and it is that traditional certification model, and it actually is not even second party. So in that situation, so you take like our certification program is third party. Again, we don't promote it and do it a lot, but it's good in certain markets and you've mentioned some of them, but that means that the company being checked against a standard, there's then the second party that owns and manages the standard, that would be us. And then there's a third party, which is an auditing firm. So you kind of have this triangle, and they make some decisions themselves. And we, second party at a minimum, I think you want to look for, which is that it's just there's one level of separation. In general, the way, and this gets very technical, but the way the US government and now the EU is looking at these things is when you have an on product, like literally on the product, consumer facing label about the environmental issues, it needs to be third party to be credible. I'm not saying, you know, but that's again a very specific, we're really talking about consumer facing products and when they stick it on the product. So impartiality, and then I would say when I was saying like look for more information on the labels, anything that's saying it's green, look for more information. And that's where I would say, what can you trust? The science, the details. Even just you, maybe you're not going to go down into the website of everything, but is there a, are they giving you sufficient detail, or is there like a URL? You know, is there a website where you could go for more information? That's often a sign of credibility because it's usually then based on something. You don't have to go and read the 400-page standard, but is it based on something? And there's a website that will take you. And like you mentioned, the Forest Stewardship Council, you can go, and every label is going to have a place where you can go and you can find the actual original certificate, they call it, and you can actually free, no cost. You can, if you want to, you can read the
So,
entire FSC standard. That's more credible than if there's no information.
so I
So
think
access.
a good I just want to underline what you're saying to make it even add some clarity to it is transparency. Noticing if there's if there is transparency, you can get to the documents. And I mean, I do that too. It's it frankly it is very complicated, but I just have a very simple thing that I do now. I'm clicking through and I'm like, okay, like you just said, like, oh, can I get
to the next document. And then if I can, then great. And then the other thing lately, because I'm into herbal supplements and things like that. And so now, I grow mushrooms and I like medicinal mushrooms. And so I, you know, a lot of those come from China. And I don't really trust the Chinese, whatever equivalent of, you know, regulatory bodies to keep the toxins out of foods, and mushrooms bioaccumulate heavy metals and stuff. So I just recently, and probably many people already know about this, but I just recently started asking my suppliers about certificate of analysis, which is the COA, which is one of those things. It's one of those transparency things where they have, they've actually got a certificate that says that what's in the product is in the product. And I believe those are independently verified. So that's great. And then if you wouldn't mind, I know this is a bigger question, but I would like to broach the government versus non-government agency. Because again, when you say government, you lose half of the people in the room. So what ensures that the agency is, you know, the UEBT is independent, that they're making choices that are in the consumers, the people and nature's best interest, rather than a bureaucrats or something like that.
I mean, well, I think, you know, I think we need everybody working at this, and some governments, you know, are probably doing better than others on climate, on nature protection, on things like that, on, you know, living wage. But there is a role for government, and there is a role for private sector. And I've been working for 25 years in nonprofits, so I also believe there's a role for us. I don't think it's us versus governments. I think we all have a role, and we all have to lift in all the ways we do. We all have different tools in our toolbox, right? So for example, one of the things we can't do is we can't make something mandatory that the whole industry has to follow. And there are some issues where I think if you want to see real change, we do need strong regulations, you know, and I'm not trying to get political here.
No, I think, you know, you can bring it back to it. Can I interrupt for a second? If you can stay safe, you can just bring it back to historical regulations, like, you know, when they started cleaning up the air, you know, in America, or when they started getting the the DDT out of our food supply. Yeah. I mean, you know, when you come into the modern context, all of the current players who have a vested interest in the system get all up in arms. But all you got to do is go back a few 10 or 20 years and see, like, yeah, we don't want to go back on those regulations. Those regulations were good. We don't want DDT in our food supply. We don't want Agent Orange in our food supply. You know, we don't want massive amounts of particulate pollution in our air, you know? So anyways, I just wanted to underline that because it gets so sticky.
It's really true. And I think, you know, you can definitely point to some of those significant things that, you know, even my generation, I grew up in the 70s, mm-hmm. you know, we take for granted, for example, things even on the social side, like minimum age of work or the 40 hour work week, which I think, you know, if you were a child in the 1890s, there was nobody was looking at that. And of course, there's still challenges, even if the laws are there. But I do want to say, like, for us in the nonprofit world, there are limitations in what we can do, because everything we do is voluntary. Right? Mm-hmm. We cannot force a company to take an action. So what our tools are in our toolbox are, we have a standard, we develop it, we promote it, we are independent, which can add some value to a business that needs to find a good independent partner to advise them, because many of them do want to do the right thing, but they're business people. They're not forest experts or agronomists, you know, so our independence helps us. But we're not regulators, we're not lawmakers. So we use these tools and we sort of help work with them. We can bring some value because we are neutral, because we have some specialized expertise, and we are nonprofits. You know, we're not funded by taxpayer money, but we're also not a for-profit, which gives us some ability to do some other things, but it does limit us. And this is why I say we need everybody. And I'm not a person to say, well, the way is laws. Oh no, the way is all certification. Certification, yes. Laws, yes. Sustainability is really complex, and it's environmental, it's social, it's different in different places. There's biodiversity issues, there's climate issues, there's just good agriculture practices, there's issues around chemicals and pollution, there's issues around forest loss, biodiversity loss. There's a lot of work to be done, and so we need all the approaches. Right. We need it all.
Yeah, that's great. And again, that's wonderful to hear. And I, anyways.
No, I love that. I mean, you're getting into these kinds of existential and really exciting conversations that I think we have with ourselves, and what is our purpose here, and all of these things. And I have to just share, I am married to a bacteriologist, so I'm going to check that statistic with him.
I don't know if it's right. It's pretty high.
It probably is, but I mean, yeah, and that's a whole other world of science, not environmental science. But you're right, we are host to many bacteria, and you know, and there's the microbiome, or the microbial elements in soil, all the bacteria and healthy soil. So I just want to say, just I love everything you said, but I think one of the things, what you said, I find very helpful. So going back to consumers and choices and people who care, is it all of this is really overwhelming. So, you know, the sustainability issues, the global urgent issues, climate change, biodiversity loss, pollution, all of these things are really, really overwhelming. But if you think of what you just said as we are a collective, then you can be growing plants in a way that, and you're not getting any certification, but you're selling these things right there. I'm pretending now you're a local farmer, and you're selling them at the farm stand, and that's your contribution. Yeah. And I'm working in a nonprofit on this very specific technical way of working on these very specific things, and that's my contribution. And then there's somebody working away in the government of Madagascar trying to work on a specific type of law. We need it all, but I think it also allows us to not feel we have to do everything. And understand everything and know what is the right brand that I purchase in every product I buy. We're going to get it wrong, but I think maybe we can just trust that there are other people who their weird, nerdy area is to look at palm oil.
Right.
You know, I'm working on botanicals and with beauty brands. It's very specific, but I've got colleagues, wonderful colleagues, who are looking at industrial scale mining, and that's a whole other, and I just trust they're going to do that, and they're going to make sure my iPhone and the minerals in it are not creating harm. But you know, if I think of all of it, it's overwhelming.
That's great.
So, and we are a collective.
I love that. And that really helps me, because I wasn't even thinking of it that way, but that really, I was like, oh, I can relax a little bit. Like, I'm going to do my part, and I'm going to find people like you and try to get information out about all of these ideas. And I do want to say one thing. I haven't made this video yet, because I do construction videos as well. But I did a little research on the tool companies. And like we were talking about earlier, I just was trying to figure out, like, do any of them even care? You know, and one of them did, you know, like I found that I looked at Makita, Milwaukee, and DeWalt, which are the main battery tool companies that most people use in the United States. And DeWalt was the only one that even had a policy that was even trying to move in the direction of sustainability. The other two was like, I tried to dig down that rabbit hole on the webpage, and there was nothing there, you know? So I think
that's really interesting. And that tells you something.
Yeah. And I guess I want to say this for the people who are like, we keep talking about complexity. it's actually not that hard. I think if we go back to this idea of transparency and at least, and just look like, so this is one thing I like to think of. This really helps me. Like, like you said before, don't try to be perfect. Like, never let perfection be the enemy of progress. And so if I'm looking at three different brands and one of them even has a sustainability policy on their website and the other two don't, well, then just choose the one that's at least got a policy. You know?
Right. Right. Yeah, exactly. And hopefully in another year or two, maybe one of the other ones will start to have a policy. And, you know, it is a little bit like they come and then more come and they, you know, but consumers have a role. And the more and more people who look for transparency, accountability, some kind of attention to the issues in ways that, you know.
It blows my mind. On a positive note, it blows my mind, like where we were back in the 80s, you know, the 70s and the 80s, and where we are now. Like, I would be, you couldn't find a piece of organic fruit anywhere in the 80s. It was impossible. They didn't exist, you know. And so, you know, I do have hope. We are the collective that we're creating and connecting and building is, you know, we got a lot of work to do, but we're getting somewhere. We're moving.
You're right. The awareness is super high. It's the highest we've ever been. Everybody's thinking about this stuff.
Yeah.
So that is also really hopeful because, you know, I mean, I never even thought about this. Like I was in high school in the 80s. I never thought about this.
Yeah.
No one was talking about the environment.
No. Yeah. Well, let's leave that. Yeah. Let's leave on this positive note. This is good. There's hope.
Yeah, good. Absolutely. Absolutely. And Gen Z, and you know, they're thinking about it.
I've been really excited with the young people that I've been meeting, who and how aware they are and how interested they are. So, thank you so much. And maybe we can do a follow up about, you know, some other in depth about Carnauba or whatever another product is. I don't know. For me, I love geeking out on this stuff. It's just fascinating. Like, how can we rebuild all these systems in ways that are enhancing life? Yeah.
Great. Yeah. Super. Well, thanks so much for having us. And I hope people find it interesting.
Yeah, I think they will. Thanks for watching. All the links to the relevant websites will be in the description, as well as links to my coaching offerings, books and newsletter, and website. And the best way that you can support the channel is by subscribing on YouTube, or if you are listening on the podcast, subscribing and downloading on Apple or Spotify or whatever is your podcast of flavor. And thanks for being someone who cares about the planet and who's trying to make the world a better place. And I wish you the best of luck in your life and making your life better, while at the same time making life on Earth better as well.